almost invariably they try and get away. So Nick's experience is a typical experience of coming across a leopard at short distance. All you see is a blur of spots and colour gone.
I think they're firmly established in the food chain. They're obviously breeding. I was 12 when I first saw the Black Panther, and those cats are still reported in the same area now. They're here to stay.
Welcome to Big Cat Conversations. We speak directly to people who've encountered one of Britain's big cats. We also discuss the bigger picture. I'm Rick Minter, and thanks for joining me. Welcome to episode 105 of Big Cat Conversations. For this edition, we are back in Scotland to hear about some recent and some past events there. And our guest is Paul, who is based right in the far northeast of Scotland, in the Caithness region, and he's based about 20 miles west from John O'Groats. Paul is an active investigator in Caithness, and sometimes he ventures into the neighbouring region of Sutherland. And we're going to hear about some recent cases he's been involved with, so all of these will be as far north as you can get on the British mainland. Paul, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, Rick. Thanks very much for having me on.
And how's the weather there? Last night, I remember on the national forecast, it said heavy rain warnings in North Scotland. And we're talking just before Christmas. So how's it going up there? How's the winter so far?
Well, the wind is picking up, and as usual, it's raining. So pretty much normal for winter time here.
OK, doesn't sound very friendly weather for big cats. Let's just quickly review the landscape that you're in the northeast of Scotland. It's quite a mixture, isn't it? Blanket bog inland, pastures on the coast, and a bit wild in between. Is that right?
Yeah, I would describe Caithness as mainly low rolling hills, and about, say, 60% of the land mass is agriculture, and the rest is moorland, plantation forestry, lochs, rivers. And an awful lot, of gorse up here, a lot of gorse.
Not quite as craggy and wild and remote and rugged and high up as a lot of neighbouring Scotland.
No, it definitely is not, no.
Plenty of habitat for the cats and plenty of deer, plenty of red deer and other types of deer, are there?
Oh, definitely. Basically, every little patch of forest has two or three roe deer in it. We have red deer now coming in closer to the centre of the county. I know that from a farmer who told me he's got red deer in forests around his farm now. There's no end of places the cats could be in with the gorse and the forests, you know, plenty of cover for them.
And Paul, you've been investigating for about 3 years or so now, but before then, did you have an interest in the cats? What prompted your initial interest in the subject?
Well, when I was growing up, I would regularly hear stories about people seeing these black cats in various locations around the county. And I never really doubted that they were there, because in the mid-70s, as you'll know, there was the Dangerous Wild Animals Act. I was aware of stories in the press where people were releasing these cats rather than having them handed over to zoos or put down, you know. So I thought, well, where better to release one of those cats than up in Caithness, where there's so much of the land where nobody goes, and it would provide a perfect habitat for them, really. That's what I thought. I never doubted that they were there.
So you do think that they were dumped in that area, as well as some might have dispersed to that area as well, perhaps?
Yes, well, I mean, I heard that a story that at the old American base at Force, just west of Thurso, somebody did have a leopard as a mascot. I don't know if that's true, but I actually got an encounter story from someone I work with, and he talked about when he was at a hill opposite the Dounreay nuclear plant. Him and his father were out with a terrier, and they were just catching rabbits, and their dog had gone in to chase the rabbit into this big lump of gorse. So what they did was they kicked the gorse to try and scare the rabbit out. But what happened instead was a big black cat leapt up on the other side of the gorse and took off. That was in the late 80s. So I thought, well, that's about the time that the American base actually shut. So maybe someone did have one and release one. So that's what I thought about that. But again, that could be one that's always been there anyway, you know.
And what about pumas. You do get reports of tan-coloured ones, and you do get reports of vocalisations which are more puma-like, don't you, as well?
Yes, yes. Actually, I know of two puma encounters in Thurso itself. One was down on a beach adjacent to Victoria Walk, which comes from Scrabster into Thurso. And that was a couple on a Friday morning, I think it was. They were out walking their dog about 7:30 in the morning. They just happened to see a puma sitting on the beach, and they watched it for a couple of minutes, and it just noticed them and then turned around and went around a small headland which leads to a river and just was gone. And then the second encounter in Thurso was a chap who worked at a local supermarket. His job was in the early mornings to open the warehouse door and the gate to allow the lorries in, and he stood and watched a puma come down the road. He knew exactly what he was looking at. He described it perfectly. The supermarket is just across from the Park Hotel in the town, so you're basically in an urban area.
Interesting about one on the beach. I mean, we do get reports of them on the beach. I'm surprised there aren't more reports of them on beaches and along the coast. And of course, we've not discussed, I don't think, on the podcast, the potential for them to predate seals and seal pups in the autumn. But I think that would happen.
That's an interesting point, because I did speak to someone from up west, as we say up here. He had found a seal carcass on a beach, and it looked very much like it was a cat kill.
Interesting. Did he take a photo?
I don't know, but the chap who told me about it was a former big game hunter, and he was shown the carcass.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, I think it's very easy picking, especially the smaller ones, for a cat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Better not tell my daughter. She's a vet and she's involved in seal rescue. She's very sympathetic about the cats, but she might change her view if she knew the extent to which some of them might be snaffling seals on the coast. I think the coastline is good for all kinds of things getting washed up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Good stuff. And in terms of your range of reports that you've heard about in the region, Paul, what's one that, say, stands out? I know we're going to get to the more recent ones in a minute, which is the sort of gist of our discussion. But say, going back in the past, what's one that's a real standout one for you that you've heard?
Well, this is the one that got me into actually investigating these cats. And it was a family member had seen two black leopards together one night in December of 2020. The story was that he'd pulled out of this side road onto the main road and began to accelerate. And in his headlights ahead of him, he saw a black cat, cross the road and leap onto the wall. And it looked in his direction. So he saw the eye shine, and then it leapt off the wall into the field. Two thoughts crossed his mind was that that's quite a big cat, and the distance between the eyes was unusual, you know, and he thought, well, that can't be an ordinary cat. So he pulled up at the spot where he'd seen it leap onto the wall, put hazards on, got a torch, and stepped out of the car onto the verge, shone the torch into the field, and there were two black leopards standing looking back at him. He could see them clearly, and he gave a very good description of the physical size of them. They looked at each other for a few seconds, and the one on his left, as he looked at it, turned to its right, walked off into the darkness. Then the second one followed that one. And after it disappeared, he suddenly took a bit of panic and thought, what if there's a third one around here? So he just basically leapt back in the car, went home, had a cup of tea, phoned me about it. So what we did then was the following Saturday, because it's winter and we could only go out in daylight really to see anything, we went out to the location and I said to him, I says, well, there has to be some kind of indication here that they've been here. So let's have a look. And bear in mind, I'm a complete novice at looking for sign of these cats or any kind of wildlife at the time. So we're standing on, looking on the verge, and the verge was all like very short, wet grass, as you get in winter. And I suddenly realized there was these impressions all over it. So I was looking at the size of them, and they're about 3 inches. And then I started looking at the spacing, and I realized this was clearly a four-legged animal that had been moving on the verge here. So I said to him, I said, look at this. And so we're looking and studying it, trying to figure out which direction it was sort of walking back and forth in. and I spotted four impressions, because this is interesting, because there were two cats, but he didn't see the first one. It was the second one that he saw across the road. There were actually four impressions where you could see, obviously, the first cat had stood and turned round and stood on the verge, looking back across the road, waiting for the second one. You could see that clear as day. So I said to him, I says, well, there's no doubt about it. They were on here. So let's have a look in the field now. So I went into the field, and the field was mainly very long grass, but it's been flattened with the wind and the rain that you get in winter up here. I said to him, I says, there has to be something in there. So I went in and went to the spot where it leapt over, and you could see again 3-inch impressions quite deep into this grass. Just like as if you see a domestic cat land with its paws together, you know. So I said to him, I said, right, what we'll do is now I'll walk back from the wall, and when you think I'm at the right distance, I'll stop and then we'll measure that. So we got a distance of just on 50 feet from the wall that we were both at. I had two sticks with me. I came quite well prepared for this, actually. So I had two sticks, and I said to him, tell me where to position them. So I just walked to one side with the first one. He said, put it there. So I just stuck it in the grass, walked to the other side with the second one. He said, put it there, stuck it in the grass. And right where I put the sticks, again, you could see impressions where they'd been standing looking back at them. And then you could follow all those impressions exactly the direction he'd said. And we actually followed them for about 40, 50 yards maybe. And I said, well, that's enough proof for me. There's no doubt they were through here, you know. And that's really the sighting that got me going. At the time, of course, there wasn't much else going on, so I thought, well, I might as well do this.
Well, excellent following up. And of course, there's not much left, is there? Although it can give you an indication to verify what the witness says, it's still not compelling to live on and show other people, really.
Yeah. There's one little thing I forgot to mention, was we made an estimate of height for the eyeshine. So all I did was I had a little hand torch, and I just held a stick, and I said to him, right, I'll lift this torch up the stick, and you say to tell me when to stop when you think that's the right height for the eyes. So I did that, and I measured it, and the eyes were at 90 centimetres above ground level. He described them, he said, the cats, what he could see, they looked very healthy. They had thick torsos, he said. So they're obviously well fed.
Seeing them in the car light, was he?
It was a torch light. He had a torch with him in the car. So it was an LED torch, so it was quite bright, so he could see them well enough.
What did he make of the behaviour? What type of behaviour did he think he was observing? And what did he judge or guess what the relationship was between them, whether they were two adults?
They were similar sized. And I started looking into the black leopards after that, of course, and what I'd read was that they were solitary animals, unless, like, when the female's in heat, the male would come around looking, you know? So I thought, well, maybe we could assume that's a male and a female, possibly.
You didn't think it was a younger one grown up alongside mum still?
No, he thought they were the full-grown adults, same size, he said.
What kind of attitude did they have to him, did he say?
Well, I said to him, I think the reason they stopped and turned was that he'd pulled up and they put on his hazards on the car. So they obviously saw the flashing light. And cats, being curious, probably thought, well, what's that about? So they just turned to have a look. He didn't feel threatened. They didn't growl at him or anything like that. They were just sort of looking at him. And then they obviously decided he wasn't very interested, and they just decided to go carry on their way.
Did you hear, or did he hear, any more sightings of two or even one around that time from other people?
No. That's the only sighting I've ever heard up here where two have been seen together, I think. I actually was speaking to some people who live along that road now. One is a former colleague of mine, and he mentioned that quite often coming home just after midnight from his back shift, he would sometimes see eyes shine further up the road. And he said, I always thought it was deer, but now I'm thinking, well, maybe it was something else. Another fellow who lives there, he went out on his quad bike one day into a forest area about a mile away from that road. Some of the branches from the pine trees were growing in such a way they were starting to block the tracks that he was using. So his intention was to go out with a chainsaw and cut back the branches and that. So overnight there had been a fresh fall of snow, so he went off out, and he's coming along, and he spots all the tracks in the ground, and he stops because he's about to cut some branches, and then he noticed the paw prints in the snow, as well as the deer tracks, and he said the paw prints were 3 inches. And I said, "What did you do?" He said, "I got back on my quad bike and went home," he said. He wasn't staying around to see if it was still there, that's for sure.
Yeah, and of course, you get more snow than a lot of us up there.
Some years, yeah.
You're perhaps more guaranteed a bit than we might be.
Aye. The other thing is that I've found other clues up there. About 3 weeks after that, we did have some snow, and it wasn't much, but it was enough that in the area where he'd gone with his quad bike, there was enough lying that you could see tracks of animals that had been moving, like foxes and smaller animals as well. And I walked down about a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles possibly on this track. And I was coming along and I spotted this sort of iced up pond area. And as I got to 10, 15 feet, I thought, oh, there's tracks in it. But I was expecting to see a fox track, but it wasn't, it was cat. But these were smaller. These were about 2, 2.5 inch. So I thought, well, that's maybe a different cat.
It's interesting that one thing led to another and you got investigating. Very good that you did some scaling straight away on your very first follow-up, because I know we're going to hear about scaling some photos later on in our conversation. Of course, scaling is and measurement is absolutely crucial to so much of this. So good that you did that.
Absolutely, yeah.
You've had quite a busy time in the last few months. So we're going to start with, I think, a key sighting that got to you via Facebook in the summer, I think it was. Could you start by describing the sighting that you heard about?
Okay. Paul MacDonald, who leads the research team in Scotland, he had a report via Facebook from a tourist who was staying at John O'Groats. And she'd said that she'd seen a large black cat in a field alongside the road near John O'Groats. And the description she gave was perfect for a black leopard, basically. One interesting part of the description of what she saw was, I mean, she described the animal as if it was stalking something. So I thought, that could be interesting. Maybe it was chasing a rabbit, something like that, possibly. I decided that day I was going to go out and investigate this sighting. So I got the details and the location, and I drove out there and I parked up next to the field in question. I went over the gate into the field. She said it was about 20 feet into the field, so I went into that sort of distance and sort of parallel defence, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, well, this field has been cut recently, the grass for baling, and the ground is quite firm, so I thought, well, I'm not really going to find anything here. So I was looking about me, and I spotted some grass lying along the side of the field that hadn't been picked up by the baler, and it was rotting away. So I thought, well, what's the chances it's walked through there? So I went over and had a look, and bingo, it had walked through this rotten grass. So I thought, great. Had a look at the impressions, and again, there were 2, maybe 2.5 inch at most. And again, you could see the spacing. It's definitely a four-legged animal, and I'm building a mental impression of what I'm looking at here. So I'm thinking about the space between the prints, the angle the legs would have been at. Now, I thought, well, she described it as Labrador size, and I thought, looking at this, I think no argument with that. And then there was another couple of areas of rotten grass, so I checked them, and there was a couple of prints in those. And I started to notice long grass at the side was pushed down, like something had been going along it. So I'm thinking, stalking, you know, so maybe that's what flattened the grass when the cat was stalking. So I went back to the first rotten grass area, and I was going to take some measurements and photographs. And that's when I noticed at the end of the rotten grass, 4 smaller impressions, and they were maybe 1 inch. 4 of them, and I'm looking at it thinking, wait a minute, what if this cat's got a young one with it? That might explain the stalking behaviour, because I was thinking about how domestic cats, the mothers will play with the kittens, you know, and they'll kind of stalk them and play games with them. And I thought, no, surely not. And I thought, oh, it'll just be a rabbit, you know. But there's still that element of doubt in my mind. I am thinking there's a young one here as well. So I was looking then to see, where's this cat gone? So I could see at the long grass, where it passed through the long grass, and then there's a fence, and then after that there's a small forest. So I could see like a hole in the foliage, so I thought, right, it's leapt over the fence and it's gone in there. So I thought, I'll have to go in that forest to look. I think I better park somewhere better. So I decided to go further up the road. I got a far better parking space. So we're on to about 8 o'clock at night now. So that night, the weather wasn't great. It was very dark grey skies. Rain was threatening from the west.
You're still in fairly light conditions, though, because it was summer time, though. Is that right?
Yes, but it was actually surprising that night because the cloud was very thick. So it wasn't as bright as it normally would be at that time of night. I got all my kit together out of the van and I decided I'd put on this high-vis cycling jacket. As I was going to walk down the road, I wanted to be seen, you know. So I started walking down the road towards the forest. I got to within about 30 feet of the corner of the forest and I heard a really odd vocalization come out of the trees. And I stopped. I thought, what on earth is that? And then almost immediately, this bull bellowed in reply a couple of fields away. Well, I thought it was in reply. I got that instinctive feeling that's what it was. And I thought, what on earth was that? And I just thought, oh, it'll be nothing, you know. Across the road, and this was me heading into this bit of forest. I must admit, I'd become quite complacent by then because in the years I've been looking into it, I hadn't caught anything on trail cam. I hadn't seen anything myself. So normally what I do before I go into a forest is I'll stop, look, listen. If there's any dark areas, I have a very bright torch I'll shine in to have a look. And as I go in, I've got a stick and I'll knock a couple of trees just to let the wildlife know I'm there. But this time I didn't do any of that, which was a bit of a mistake, really. I just crossed the ditch over the fence and I was at the end of the forest. So I walked in a few feet, turned, and I started to walk through this long grass. So first thing I found was just between the long grass and the trees is this bedding area where something's obviously been lying there. So I said, oh, well, that'll probably just be a deer. Now, next to that was a hole in the foliage. Now, these trees at the edge of the road, they weren't higher than maybe 15 feet, but quite dense and low branches and that. So I decided to myself, right, I'm going in through that hole. So I did that and I went in and the branches started catching my backpack. So I thought, well, this is no good. I only took a couple of steps in before I was getting kind of stuck. So I looked to my left and I could see a gap in the trees. So I crawled out under there and I stood up and that's when it all kicked off. The first thing I heard to my left was a sound and I thought to myself, I thought, that sounds like a young cat, almost kitten-like. And I just thought, oh no. And then immediately to my right, there was this ear-piercing whistle sound. I don't know, do you want me to try and replicate it?
Yeah, have a go if you can.
Okay. It was kind of like this. But if you imagine it, four or five of them, but far more intense than that. It was almost enough to knock me off my feet. It really disoriented me. When the whistling stopped, I turned and I looked up the trees and I said out loud, which is really strange, I said, there's no birds in Caithness that sound like that. And I said, there's nothing up here that sounds like that. Well, then I heard the first growl. My mind was racing. Panic was setting in. But with the growl came the full-on fear. I mean, I've never experienced fear like that before in my life. My mind is racing. I hear the first two growls. And I'm thinking, I'm in a really bad place here. I'm between the mother and her young. I've got to get out of here. I had thoughts I thought were instinctive, like, don't look at it. It might consider that to be a threat. Don't look at the young. It might consider that you're going to threaten them, so it might have to do something to you. And the other one was, just get out of here. So again, my eyes are dead level, and I'm just frozen. And I just said out loud, right, I'm leaving. And I turned round, kept my eyes level, and I walked back through the gap in the trees towards the long grass. And I'm just hearing the growling behind me. And I'm just thinking, oh, please, just leave me alone. Just let me go, you know. So I get through the long grass, down through a ditch again, and I come to the fence, and I'm thinking, just let me go, just let me go. And I'm trying to get over this fence, and it's very shaky, so it's quite hard to get over. So eventually I got over. And I take a few steps into this field and I turn around and look back and I'm thinking, what on earth just happened to me? At the same time, I know what happened. I'd stumbled in on the mother and her young because I was complacent. I didn't take my usual precautions. I took a few steps back and I'm looking, I'm thinking, my mind is just reeling now, you know? So now bear in mind, there's a gap in the trees and there's no wind at this moment, and I'm seeing this branch, and suddenly this branch of the tree just moves. And I think, my God, it's just gone past that branch and brushed against it. So I'm thinking, what on earth do I do now? So I phoned a former colleague of mine who's very much into her wildlife, and I told her about the cats before. So I phoned her up and I said, look, I've just had an encounter with one of these things. If you come out, we might just get to see it. So she said, right, I'm coming out and I'll take my drone and we can drone the area as well. So then I phoned my brother as well, and I told him, and he says, right, I'm coming out as well. So in the time it took them to get out, I almost staggered up this field along the fence to the gate to get back to the road. And eventually they turn up, but by the time they arrived, it started quite heavy rain. So my colleague said, well, I won't be able to drone in this weather. It just won't like the rain. What we all did was we drove back down to the corner of the forest, parked up, got out, and we just stood and listened. And we didn't think it was there anymore. And as we're standing listening, I looked down at the verge and there was these impressions about the same size as I found in the field. And I said, oh, look, you can see where it's been walking back and forth in this verge here. And she was like, oh, yes, yes, so you can. And then my brother looked on the other side of the road and he found impressions and he said, oh, it's been over here as well. So we're standing there, and next minute, from the forest on the other side of this roe deer came flying out of this forest, and it came out so fast it almost lost its footing on the road and almost slipped and landed, you know, fell down. And it sort of stopped, looked at us, and then bounded into the forest that I'd just come out of. So my brother said, aha, I'll bet the cat's in that other bit now. And I said, well, I'm not going on a look, I can tell you that.
The deer have been panicked out.
Yes, exactly. So my colleague, she left, and then I said to my brother, I says, I'll tell you what, we'll go down to the field and I'll show you what I found. So we did that and I showed him. But the interesting thing was the roe deer was still going up the hill, but it kept looking back. It was watching for the cat, you know. So pretty much that was that.
It just shows you how you followed your nose and you actually got to the, you know, absolute heart of the matter. In some ways, it's quite fun for us to now hear that you were complacent, because nothing much have happened had you beaten your stick and shuddered the ground and shone around with your torch. But in a way, you had confirmation of the sighting and got right into the thick of the action. Now, did you still have your high vis on at the time?
Yes. And now that's the interesting thing, because I realised that when I'd first gone in through that hole in the foliage, I was looking straight ahead of me. Now, to my right, I did hear a funny noise, but I didn't turn to look at it, which was probably a good thing, because that was obviously the cat right there. And Lord knows what would have happened if I'd seen it, you know, face to face. Could have been a very different result.
What kind of distances were they, do you think, from you?
Oh, the cat, maybe when I first went in that foliage, you'd be lucky if it was 3 or 4 feet, because there was so little space in that corner. It must have been right in the corner. And that hole in the foliage was just 3 or 4 feet from it. And then, of course, when I stood in that gap between the trees, it must have come a little bit closer, but I couldn't see it because it was under the foliage. And also because I was too scared to look anyway. So I came pretty close to it.
So you think the first noise was communication between mother and young, do you? And the second noise was telling you to just beat it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I found a video on YouTube and it's called Cougar Calling with Cubs. And that's been filmed, I think, in a national park in America. But you can hear the cougar makes this bird-like sound. And if you took that sound and amplified it and put it in a higher pitch, more to a sort of panicky sound, you would replicate what I heard perfectly.
The witness description was what, in terms of colour?
It was black. It was described as black, and she said that she could see the rosettes. The leopard ones I could find were closer to it, but I didn't find a video where I was hearing exactly like a warning growl, if you like. The growls just weren't quite the same. I could probably try and imitate the growl if you wanted me to.
Yeah, have a go, yeah.
Okay, I'll have to take a very deep breath for this. So it sounded kind of like this. A bit longer than that. It's got bigger lungs than me, of course. And then I could hear the breath in as well. It was a really deep breath in. And then another growl. Yeah, it was after the second one that full-on fear hit me. and I just had to get out of there.
Definitely directed at you, not miscontented and frustrated animal, but directed at you, you think, a warning?
Oh, definitely, definitely directed at me. Yeah, no doubt about that. I did a lot of thinking about the whole encounter, and one thing I realised afterwards was that there was a lot of cattle in the fields around there, and they were very restless, and I didn't pay attention to that, and I should have. So that's something I do now, is I always look around at what the farm animals are doing, what the wildlife is doing, and just really pay attention, because that will tell you a lot.
Yeah, well, of course, it's learning as you go, isn't it? Any good investigator learns as you go. Every case gives you a bit more experience for the next one.
Exactly, yes, yes.
Did you try and find the landowner and get permission for trail cameras, Paul? I can't remember.
Yes, I did. I got permission for the trail cameras. So it was the following week I put trail cameras in. When I did it, I had to take someone with me. I actually admitted to my friend when we went to put the trail cameras in, I says, to put it politely, I said, I'm really scared about going back here. Slightly stronger language to describe it to him, but trying to go in that forest was like hitting a wall. But we got in, set a couple of cameras up. I kept a couple of cameras going there for, probably up until about 4 or 5 weeks ago. The only thing I was getting in the forest was the roe deer and occasional fox and maybe some birds. So what I did latterly was, I know the cat is regularly going back and forth on the road there because I see its sign on the verge regularly. I know it moves that way. So I tried positioning a camera that would watch the verge and hopefully catch it at night, but I never had any luck. It was just maybe the timing of when I tried it. It was just wasn't the right time that it was going to be coming back past just then, you know.
Did the landowner say anything about previous knowledge or not of, any cat activity?
No, nothing at all. But if anyone's losing livestock up here, nobody really talks about it. I rarely hear of any livestock being lost up here.
And not all landowners would know, actually, if it's sheep and the sheep are quite remote. Sometimes they wouldn't even know, unless they're getting absolutely routine hits.
Yeah, yeah.
And now this one, we still haven't finished with this incident because we now go to your sleep mode back at home, don't we, to finish it off. So tell us what happened that night.
Oh, well, it was a Saturday night, and in my house, the fire alarm system had a tendency to go off at very random times, just of its own accord. The Saturday night after all this had happened, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I was sound asleep and the alarm went off. Unfortunately for me, the sound it made was very close to what that cat made in the alarm call. I actually woke up, my arms and legs were flailing, I was shrieking in fear, I was hyperventilating, and I actually thought the cat was there. What a mess I was in, you know, and it took me about 10 minutes to calm down, to really sort of convince myself that I was safe at home and there was no cat.
Yeah, incredible. Middle of the night and you're fast asleep and it happens again. That is, what a coincidence.
Yeah, needless to say, 2 days later I changed the alarms because I thought, I'm not having that happen again.
Isn't it interesting how a pitch of sound can be relatively similar and really get to you?
Yeah.
And so there we are. This is an encounter. I'd call this an encounter. Very full on, yet there was no sighting from you whatsoever. Yet you're convinced it was, you know, everything I think is reasonable to go along with your conclusion that there was a mother and young one there.
I mean, that little bit of forest foliage was very dense and plenty of it, and there was plenty of long grass for it to hide in. Well, it's the ideal spot just to lie up with a young one for a few days, I guess. Next year, when it comes into spring, in that particular end of the forest, I am going to put cameras again because the young one will still be with it. And chances are, if they were sort of resting there this year, they may do it again next year. So maybe might catch them. I don't know.
You don't think to just keep one or two cameras just there full time, if it's possible? How about that?
Well, the reason I took them back in is that in the last 3 weeks, I usually always catch the roe deer there or the foxes and that, but there's been absolutely nothing. So I'm thinking, well, Perhaps now the wind or the roe deer have retreated somewhere else because it's quite exposed now, that forest. There's not really any shelter in it. So maybe they've gone to the gorse banks for better shelter. So that's what I'm thinking anyway.
Okay. It's all about tactics, isn't it? Personally, if I can, I will just leave cameras around because I always think the cats are ahead of us. You know, we know where they've been, but we don't know where they're going to go. But eventually they might retrace their steps. So I think, well, I'm not going to try and second guess the activity of the cat. I'm just going to, if I know I've had a really good place where a cat's lingered a bit, and if the landowner permits or the situation permits and it's responsible, just leave cameras there. But I've just had a text today from a farmer. He was on the early episodes of this podcast talking about cats on his land, and he's a cattle farmer and quite tolerant of the cat he's had close encounters with a few years ago. But I didn't check and replace the batteries and cards about 2 months ago on these cameras, which I was going to because I was going to detour there. And I paid the penalty because I get a text today from his wife to say, John saw the cat, big green eyes, by the barn a couple of days ago. And I've missed the chance because I didn't change the cameras, even though I've had them there for a few years. So even if you've got them there semi-permanently, you've still got to be disciplined in renewing the cards and the batteries and everything. Very frustrating.
Yeah.
So does that conclude that one? I mean, were you more scared in your own bed than you were out in the woods?
I think I was, yeah. I would definitely say I was. I mean, if someone had filmed that, it would have been a brilliant comedy clip. You wouldn't believe it. And, I mean, it took me about 2 hours for the adrenaline rush to go away. I don't want it to happen again, anyway.
Nice one. Okay. Right. Well, I think then, don't we go to a very good deer carcass that you found on the roadside that is a highlight in the last few weeks? If we can, we'll put this one, if it's okay, we'll put the photo on the website to go with this episode and people could judge for themselves. But certainly when you sent it to me, I thought, yep, if I'd stumbled upon that, I would think that is likely cat. It does tick enough boxes.
That was absolutely fresh, that carcass. As soon as I set eyes on it, I knew that was fresh. That had happened overnight. So I thought, well, that particular stretch of road at night is very, very quiet. So I thought the chances of that being a roadkill and then scavenged, I thought, no. Added to that, that I know the cat does go back and forth along that stretch of road. It seems to be every 4 or 5 weeks. What I would watch is where it's left impressions. If you go back a couple of weeks later, the grass is starting to straighten up again in the summer and that. So I pay attention to that. And then new impressions tend to stand out then, you see. So I think every 4 or 5 weeks it comes up and down that road there.
And you get sightings along that road, do you?
No, I've never heard anything from that road. So I assume it's moving at night anyway, which would make sense. And as I say, at night, the road is quiet. With it being black, if a car approached, it would simply just lie down and no one would see it. And that would be it. So anyway, I went out that day. It was a Sunday morning, so I thought, I'll go out and check the trail cams that are out there. I actually drove right past the carcass and I didn't actually notice it. I was probably daydreaming a bit. So I parked at my usual spot, walked back down, and I spotted the carcass. And initially from a distance, I thought, oh, a bit of roadkill. But as I got closer and went right up to it, I thought, this is not roadkill. Because I've seen many roadkill deer in Caithness over the years, and this was nothing like that. You'll see from the photographs how it looks like the skin and the hair have been licked back on the rib cage and part of the back leg was missing. The head was completely gone. I couldn't find it at all. What I noticed was that on the side, the verge, there was an area of grass about 7 or 8 feet, just totally flattened down. And I just thought, that's where the struggle took place. The cat took it down on that there. You could see some guts lying about away from a carcass because I thought, well, that's right. That's a good indication. On the flattened grass, there was all these little tufts of skin and hair.
Yeah, the plucking signs.
Yeah. I thought, yeah, the cat has brought it down here and then it's eaten whatever, you know. I was standing outside the road there photographing this carcass, taking measurements and people driving past and they're looking at me thinking, you know, why is he photographing that sort of thing, you know? You know, who's this crazy guy?
Sometimes it's very awkward because you actually don't want to tell people the truth either.
No, you don't. No, not at all. Another reason I know that was a fresh kill is that that particular stretch of road, you will get articulated lorries going back and forth on it three or four times a day. Car owners, they'll swerve around any roadkill because you don't want to damage the bodywork on your car. But an articulated lorry does not care. It just goes straight over the top. From what was left of that, if that had happened on the Friday night, that would have been flattened into the road by the time I got there on Sunday morning. I knew this was fresh. There was no smell of it, no discoloration, nothing. It happened hours before, basically. I did look for hairs. There was little bits of black hair, but then I thought, well, I don't know if that's come off the cat. Was it just little dark hairs that might have been on the deer itself? I didn't know. So there was nothing that had a root on it or anything like that that would be ideal for DNA sampling. What I did was then I thought myself, I took all my usual photographs and measurements. And I don't know if you noticed in one of the photographs, I said, if you look at the back of the neck, I think there's a bite mark on it. So what I did with the carcass was, well, I thought, I don't want to lose his evidence. So what can I do with it? So my idea then was I dragged it through this bit of forest and sort of hung it on a tree branch, and I positioned a trail camera to watch over it. So I left that for a week. And when I went back, the remains of the carcass were completely gone. So I thought, well, I must have got something on the camera. Nope, nothing. Not a thing. And I just thought, how on earth did something manage to take that away without the camera activating and seeing it? So I don't know. There was a couple of photographs where there was one or two, you could see the shine of one eye and just a little bit away, and another one where there was two eyes, but that may have just been a fox or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, well done. Very good you came across that, and it's just a good indication. So I'd be pleased to have that on the website as a good example of one that ticks a lot of boxes. Okay, so are we going to the Newton Hill case next?
Yeah. That case is quite interesting because I actually first looked into that last August, August of 22. Someone alerted me to the fact that a chap had been up there walking with his dog one night in the darkness. He heard a sound. He had a torch with him, but he heard this sound and he shone the torch, and there was this big black cat with a rabbit in its mouth looking at him, and it growled at him and took off, you know, so it was gone. So I heard about that. And then I heard that someone who lives up there had lost chickens on two occasions. Basically, all of them had been taken. Now, there was a third attack, but that was definitely fox because I saw the carcasses and you could say, yeah, that's a fox. They were just lying everywhere, ripped to pieces, you know. The other two occasions, they were completely gone. Something had kept coming back and taking them and taking them. And also, what I'd found, that chap's wife has a horse, and in the paddock, I found paw prints in the sand. Those prints were a little over 2 inches. So I thought, well, that may be about a Labrador-sized cat, because that's what the first witness who saw it in the torch said, it was about Labrador size. I did put trail cams up there. Now, the field that the hens were in, that's where I had the trail cams. And the chap was going away to work, but he said, I will tell my wife not to put her horse in that field. But that's what she exactly did. So all I got was, I got one very interesting piece of video out of that was that a 20 or 30 second clip of this, one of the horses, and it was standing, looking out over the fence into the field just opposite, and it was stamping its hoof. And I thought, something's agitated that horse. And I thought, would a fox make a horse have that kind of reaction? I thought, well, maybe not. But maybe a cat would. But that's, again, that's pure speculation. But something had definitely upset that horse. And it was basically saying, you know, I'm standing my ground and don't come close to whatever was on the other side of that fence. That's the only sort of clue I got on trail cam up there. But then again, this year, just about 3 weeks ago, I got sent a screenshot of a Facebook post. And again, it was the man who had the hens. He'd been out walking his dog and had a run-in with a cat at the forest. I looked at the photograph. It wasn't very good. It wasn't very clear because it was a cropped photograph that he put on Facebook. He'd written that it was a cat that he'd seen. I contacted him and I went through to see him. So he took me up and showed me the area and he gave me copies of the original photograph. And it's a far better photograph. You get a far better idea of the size of it and where it is and that. the good thing about the original photograph is you see yellow in the eyes. So as soon as I saw that, I thought, right, that's a cat. I can take that as being a cat because there's yellow in the eyes.
And they're very forward-looking, aren't they? Very closely together, forward-looking predator type.
Yeah. So he said that what happened was he'd walked along the road and I think his dog has just stopped dead, and he just happened to look, and there was this cat looking at him from the trees. So it stared him out. It didn't make any vocalizations. It just stared him out, basically. But as he was being stared out, his dog, which is a full-grown Labrador, ran away down to the other end of the road, left him standing there facing this cat. But luckily, there's a fence between him and the cat anyway. So they had a face-off, and then the cat disappeared, I guess, and he just went and caught up with his dog, and that was that. I managed to get some better measurements yesterday to give an idea of the size of the cat. From the photograph, you can't see if the cat's head is up or if it's sort of low down, you know, is it level with the shoulders? Sometimes they can be. So if the cat's head was up, the top of it was approximately 28 inches and the shoulders down would have been maybe 24, somewhere about there. If the head was down level with the shoulders as it was looking at the witness, then the shoulder would be about 28 inches. So that's quite a good chunk of a cat. His encounter happened on a Sunday night, but then I heard on the Saturday night in a small area of forest next to this house, the homeowner there had seen the silhouette of a black cat moving through it. So that was on a Saturday night. Then the witness I'd heard about on a Sunday night. So Monday night, myself and another researcher from up here, Penny, we went to the area and we thought, right, we'll go in and see what we can see. So I have a night vision device and she's got a thermal device. So we went to this raised area of ground in the forest and we're just standing there. And we got a bit of moonlight, which is quite useful. So you could see enough to that you'd feel comfortable. She was looking through the thermal. I was studying through the night vision and we were there for about 15, 20 minutes and never really saw anything. So then she says to me, here, you take the thermal and have a look. So I took the thermal. I put it straight up to my eye and straight away there's this big blob in the screen. I just looked at it, and in the few seconds I was looking at it, I was thinking, that looks like it's just on the other side of a rise. And it was like, it was kind of roundish, but it was kind of like the thermal images I've seen of a cat, maybe where it's looking straight at someone. It was dead still, whatever it was. It says, I can see something, and it's right in front of us. And I put the thermal down, and I said to her, I says, I think we'll go back to that gate over there. And I put the thermal back up to look at the exact spot again, and it had moved. So I said, right, we're going to go back. So we both had pretty powerful torches, so we're walking back, just shining these torches everywhere. Got back to the gate, very relieved about that. We went on the other side of the gate, so I was just scanning with the night vision, and she's looking with the thermal, and I spotted in the night vision something in the trees about maybe 40 yards away. And I'm looking at it, I can see eyes shine. I'm thinking, what on earth is that? And then I thought maybe it was a stag, which is possible. If it was a stag, it was stood dead still and it was watching something. So I'm thinking, is it watching what I saw in the thermal? You know, it could be that. I'm assuming what I saw in the thermal was the cat. We stood and watched it and I decided to go closer to the gate to get a better look with the night vision again. And of course, when you moved and then looked again, the stag had gone. So I said to Penny, I said, well, let's just go walk back and forth on the road here and see what happens. So we were walking back along the road and she said, oh, I think I'll put my rucksack back in the van. So we went back to the van and I'm standing at the back of the van looking across at the forest. There's a gap in the trees and on the slope, it's all long grass. And I saw eyes shine reflected in the moonlight. And I just said, I've just seen eyes shine over there. And she said, no way. And I said, yeah, I've seen it. So again, we just walked back and forth on the road and we had our two devices and we were scanning, but we never saw anything again there. So that was that. So I just had cameras up and I put cameras at the place where the cat had been seen. But all I got was a couple of domestic cats and a fox and rabbits and birds. But what I think is that that's a route that probably all the animals are using to come from that bit of the forest across the road into the smaller bit. What I also found along the road there is you could see quite clearly where the cat had been walking. You could see the impressions and spacing on them again. it was a good fit for what people had seen up there. And also, as interesting as you could actually see on the verges where this cat had been lying down. I said, well, this is a very busy bit of road. A lot of cars coming along here. So if it happens to be walking here, a car comes along, all it has to do is lie down. No one will see it.
It could be watching prey at quiet nights, possibly, quiet times as well. They do lie down when they watch prey. Both theories are a possibility. Incidentally, when you had your cameras, night vision and thermal cameras, on the subject, did you record anything?
I only saw something when I had the thermal. I didn't know how to use it, so I didn't realise which button I should press to get a photograph. So I missed that opportunity. But the interesting thing was, it must have come up on that rise in between me putting my night vision down and her handing me the thermal, and I put it to my eye. So it's in that few seconds, it's just come up to have a look, because I wasn't seeing it on the night vision anyway. But I've got quite a cheap night vision. It's only like £100 or something like that. And it's not the best, but it's adequate. I have my own thermal now, so I've figured out how to use that. So next time if I can have another encounter, I'll be getting some thermal images, hopefully.
Well, I think that it is a good combination, night vision, infrared, and a thermal, because you've got both options, and working as a tandem, I think it is very good. You've also just got a second opinion. You've got to remember to keep as quiet as possible, of course, rather than chat too much.
I also try ideas to try and create lures. So, I mean, you know those little oil diffuser bottles you get in the supermarkets with the sticks in them?
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so what I do is I came up with this idea that take one of those and clean it out, get some fresh sticks and put catnip in it instead. The idea being the sticks soak up the catnip and the air then disperses the scent. I tried that where I'd had my encounter and found the carcass, but the only thing that took an interest in it in the forest was a fox, and the fox came along, sniffed it, pulled the sticks out of the jar and sort of threw them away and walked off. So it wasn't impressed.
Okay. My lures are two different types. I use Calvin Klein Obsession, bottle of that, and then I'll put some in a Tic Tac canister with cotton wool, and then put it in a hole in the ground so that just the opening of the ripped off lid of the canister is wafting out, and the cotton wool keeps it from evaporating too quickly.
Yeah.
As long as you leave it well covered in the ground, but with enough of an aperture to let the smell waft out. And then for my catnip, I buy the cheapest possible big quantities of catnip, dried catnip leaves. I also have grown catnip at home as well. Sometimes I've got fresh catnip as well. I mix it with smeared petroleum jelly, Vaseline.
Okay, yeah.
And then we'll find, you know, underside of a log or underside of a stone. And just so it takes longer to weather, basically.
Yeah.
All you're trying to do, I think, is just make sure that an animal, hopefully the cat, when it passes that area, it just spends a few extra seconds loitering so that the camera can click and get it, rather than it just passing too quickly. I don't think you're going to lure it in from a distance. I think if it's in the vicinity, it might take an interest and slow down a bit for the camera. Just like a scent stone, another option is just to put a brick-sized stone or log near the camera that all the animals, the foxes, the badgers and the potential cat, sniff and over-scent each other. And again, just making them stop and do that gives the camera more time to work. All the little tricks for the trade. But I like that lure stick thing.
Yeah. I plan to use glow sticks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah, well, I put a trail camera back at the location yesterday where that cat had been seen. Because I know the animals are using that particular path to go in and out of the forest there, I've put a trail cam up. But what I did was I put a glow stick, tied that to a tree a bit further in, maybe 15 feet from the camera, in the hope that anything that comes past will see that and just be a bit curious about it and maybe go and have a look. It might be there long enough to get filmed or photographed, possibly.
A good idea, but what about if it attracted a person, though? That's what I'm always worried about. I want a lure that's going to get the cat, but not a person to then nick the camera.
Well, there's an 8-foot fence into that forest, and hardly anyone goes in it.
Okay, fair enough.
It's actually quite spooky as well, that part of the forest, so that's another reason not to go in it.
Yes. Another option, of course, is stringing up feathers. Like, I just buy white feathers or peacock feathers from Hobbycraft or a shop like that.
But
or just pheasant feathers, you know, large feathers, and string them up. Because that movement, again, I wouldn't do that where there's humans that could be attracted, but leopards and pumas would be attracted to the movement. Obviously, you've got to do it so the camera isn't going to be set off by the wavering of the feathers. It could even be behind the camera. It could draw a cat in.
Yeah, that's a good idea,
Back to Newton Hill, that case where this guy films these eyes looking forward, very cat-like, and you measure it. Can we use those pictures on the website, Paul? Is that possible? And your scaling pictures? That certainly showed me it was very plausible.
Maybe the original one that I could send it to you, and that'll be a better one for the website, I think.
You're keeping tabs on that one, are you?
Yes, I think it's worth doing. Just the fact that the cat seems to get seen quite often there. So it's obviously, it's a regular haunt for it. So nobody really goes in that forest, and parts of it are pretty dense. It's not a huge forest, but there's a couple of areas that are dense enough that it could lie up in there probably any evening that it fancied and be quite comfortable with the weather and that.
The horse owner, she may well pick up, you know, times when the horse is very bothered and showing signs of being agitated by potential cat.
Yeah, that's true. There's a couple of other people up there who have seen the cat as well. One interesting thing possibly about the colouring of the cat is that the witness thought, he said definitely black, but he thought there was some brown in it as well. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, because normally if there's brown, it's sort of brown all over. They're more orangey brown or dark brown, which they can be when they're old or whatever, could still be a black leopard, perhaps.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Well, sometimes they've just got that colour tone anyway, rather than a more dark black. But sometimes they can fade that way when they get older.
Yeah. So maybe it's an older cat.
Yeah, because they're not always pure black, of course, the melanistic ones, if that's what they are in the first place. I wondered if you could just tell us about how you're going with the Scottish Investigators Group. I know it's very good switched on network that Paul MacDonald, who we have on the show, you know, monitors and coordinates. And how do you find it as one of the ground troops within that network? Because it must be useful to just keep in contact with fellow investigators anyway.
Oh, absolutely, because we share information on evidence that we've found and that. And look, if you have any questions, you can ask and someone might have a good idea of what the answer is. If not, you will get the answer soon. But I've got copies of photographs of pumice scat that other people in Scotland have found, scratch marks on the ground, various other things like that that I can use as reference material when I'm out. And that's very useful. Just listening to their experiences that they've had, you can learn from that as well. I mean, listening to your podcasts and the people speaking on it, that's where I've learned a great deal of information about these cats and how they behave and where they go and how they interact with people as well, which is all very useful information.
We are all in it together, and the more we can learn from each other and swap notes and prepare to be each other's critical friends and not get too grumpy when somebody disagrees or whatever, that's what it's all about. So you use Facebook and email and Zoom for just keeping in contact with each other, do you, in that network?
We have a chat group on Messenger, of course, and then there's a Facebook page. A few of us did meet up down in King Yussey, I think it was.
At the Highland Wildlife Park, was it?
Yeah, we went to there. That was incredibly interesting, actually, with regard to the lynx, to see. That actually gave me ideas about where better to look for lynx up here, because I do know of two people who say they've seen one up here. And, of course, Paul MacDonald subsequently discovered when he was up here on a trip that a dentist had exotic pets in the 70s up here. And I think a couple of lynx, and maybe he let them go, and that's maybe where those are descended from what he released, possibly.
Yes, I mean, I've not been to the Highland Wildlife Park. I must go. And, of course, presumably you saw the wildcats there as well, did you?
Oh, yes. They weren't doing much. They were just doing the usual cat thing of sitting around or sleeping or just looking disdainfully at everybody, you know. The snow leopards were particularly impressive, and you look at even the smallest one of them, I thought to myself, imagine encountering, seeing face-to-face one of those, but black. you wouldn't know what to do. You know, it's the size of them. You just think, wow.
There was a view a few years ago, which I actually shared. I don't think it's really come to fruition, that the next sort of trend of kept cats in captivity following black leopards was snow leopards. And so some of us felt that the next wave of releases and the ones seen, the newer ones seen, would be white, and we'd get some snow leopard releases or escapes, and we'd be seeing white cats. Now, very occasionally, there are reports of whitish-coloured cats, which just might be a snow leopard, but it doesn't seem that we're getting a trend and a wave of snow leopards out in the British countryside like we think we have got with black leopards. And their tails are incredible, aren't they? This, like, door draft excluders.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One thing, I did a little experiment when I was there and looking at them. We have a thing where you take a blade of grass and put it between your two thumbs and blow through it, and you get high-pitched sound.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I did that just to make a kind of alarm call, and the big leopard sort of looked at me and sort of pulled a face at me. It wasn't too impressed with that, so I thought I'd try it and see if I get a reaction, and I did, so.
Yeah. Some people say, actually, if you're in a confrontation situation, make a noise, and fair enough, but I think you've got to be careful what noise you make, because if you make one that's too high pitch, they might start taking an interest in you and approaching rather than backing off. So,
very true.
Did the Highland Wildlife Park people know that you were big cat investigators interested in the cats that are out in the wild in Scotland?
Some of the team did have their polo shirts and T-shirts on, but myself and Carl Sheriff, we didn't. So we ended up paying to go in. But the others arrived after us, and when they saw the polo shirts, they said, oh, off you go in.
Yeah. Did any of them say anything to discuss the topic with you?
No. We never really talked to anyone. The staff there, we were just walking about, having a look and experiencing.
And in terms of when you just bump into other citizens in Thurso area and Caithness and North East Scotland, and when you talk about big cats and hear about attitudes, what kinds of things do you hear?
Everybody seems to be interested in the subject, and I would say the majority of people I talk to are quite accepting of the fact that they're there, even if they haven't seen one themselves. But invariably, most people will know someone who knows somebody who's seen one. Over the years, I've had stories from colleagues at work, people out with work, and then I've heard historical stories as well. Actually, when I first started looking into this, I put a post up on a local community page, and I asked, it was in the farming section, so I asked, has anyone seen any unusual large cats in the county? If so, let me know. So I actually got a message from someone who stays down in Leibster, and this person said that they were brought up in the Caithness countryside, and they were told from a very young age, if you see a black cat, leave it alone, don't annoy it, just walk away from it. And that person said that was over 70 years ago. So they knew about, they were around then as well.
Well before the Dangerous Wild Animals Act event.
Yeah, well, there was actually a black leopard shot at a farm in the Castletown area, I'll say. There is a photograph of somebody holding it up by the tail. And I know someone, my neighbour has actually seen that photograph. So that cat was shot because it was taking a lot of sheep at the time. I remember the stories in the paper, a few reports saying that a lot of sheep were being killed at this farm. And, you know, there's speculation as to what it was. But a black cat had been seen in that area anyway. So obviously that was what was doing the killing, and they shot it. But they had to, really, you know, there was no other choice.
Yeah, and so there's a photo that exists that hasn't been on Facebook or YouTube or on the web, but people have seen it.
Yeah, I spoke to the chap who's in the photograph. All he said was, oh, I don't think I know, I remember where that photograph is, but maybe one day he might find it and he might show me. So hopefully.
And it's best not to be too pushy, isn't it, and let people take their time. Do you get frustrated that it is a slow burn issue and it's tricky to get the real evidence and the trail cameras are blunt instruments? And what do you make of investigating and how slow we are on turning up really good primary evidence?
I suppose I am frustrated sometimes that we don't seem to get, well, I don't seem to get the photographs or video that I would like or get a sighting that I would like. but I know they're out there. Enough people have seen them. There's enough evidence to indicate they're there. So I know it's only a matter of time before I will see one myself or catch one on camera, possibly. And that way, I'm not frustrated, but I would like to see one with my own two eyes, just to watch it move. I would really like to be able to find perhaps if there's a remote spot in the county where one makes a regular layer, so I could maybe sit from a distance and watch it occasionally, even something like that. I would really like to do that. I've got a great curiosity about these animals. I really want to learn about them and how many do we have up here, where their roots are that they follow. And it's a fascinating subject. And I mean, I like to be in the outdoors anyway. I always used to go out walking or cycling. So, I mean, it's a win-win for me. So I'm doing two of my favourite hobbies at once, basically, you know.
I think that is the attitude, to just be patient, enjoy every aspect of it and just be patient and keep at it.
I don't give details as to exactly where these sightings have happened or where I've found evidence, because I know myself, if I've got permission to go on that land, the last thing the farmer wants is a flood of people going out there thinking that they're going to see a cat. I'm very careful about who I tell and what I tell.
Absolutely. That's the sort of etiquette one has to follow on this stuff.
Yeah.
And in terms of your attitudes about the cats themselves, your emotional attitude about big cats living in the wild, do you think it's good, bad, or it all depends? And how does it relate to rewilding? You know, what's your view on that front?
I think it's a good thing. They're obviously not a threat to us, because if they were, we would know about it by now. Yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, cats are my favourite animals anyway, you know, no matter what size they are, really. But yeah, I'm happy with it, you know. The talk of rewilding with lynx, well, they're a bit late with that because they are here. That's a fact. They're a good thing. And if enough was publicised about them up here, it could even be good for their tourist industry up here, you know. You might get people who might come up here in the hope that they might see a big cat, possibly. In relation to, say, livestock losses, as long as the cats aren't officially acknowledged as being there, I mean, the farmers can't get compensation. So I'd imagine if the government turned around and said, yes, these cats do exist out there, we recognise that they'll have to have some kind of compensation scheme for the farmers, for the livestock that they do lose. Because, yeah, they do lose sheep to them. And probably some small holders might lose things like goats, hens and that. So there would have to be some kind of compensation in order that the farmers, etc., would put up with these animals. So that's understandable. I'd be quite happy with that if that kind of happened.
Yeah, so you recognise the downsides, but you think they'd just be systematically dealt with and people helped out?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And if you had to think about the relationship between the three different types of cats, what kind of proportions do you think you've got in Caithness, based on the information, the hunches that you get as an investigator?
Right, okay. I would say in the county, we must have a minimum of two female. There's definitely one large male, because I've tracked it at various locations. Well, there's now obviously young in the county, because if the two that were seen together 2 or 3 years ago were male and female, then they'll have offspring. And this one I had the encounter with has offspring. So you could be looking at 4 or 5 in the county, I would think. And then the puma, because there haven't been many sightings, maybe the puma is straying here from more up the west coast, Betty Hill way, possibly, because they're definitely seen more often up there. So maybe when they come down this way, this is just an occasional foray for them to come to this area, possibly. But there might be one resident, as possible, or even two. Well, as to the lynx, yeah, they're obviously here because two people have told me they've seen them. So, but another thing on that subject is that the former big game hunter I was speaking to, he expressed amazement that these cats are all covering the same territory.
Yes. Every region we get this, the same three types are reported in the same areas. They must actually coexist in certain territories. You know, they must be sharing territories at times, unless the territories are really flexible, which, of course, is another discussion point in Britain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, up here, the size of the territory is going to depend on the prey available. So less prey, it might be in need of bigger territory, I would imagine.
Yeah, and seasonal differences, like when the young deer are born in the forest and the cats are attracted to that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting you were saying numbers. I was only thinking about proportions, but do you feel, though, that as an investigator you would get to hear everything? I certainly don't think I get to hear everything down here in Gloucestershire. I think there's, you know, people who just keep things to themselves, so that's the problem. The sightings, if they're very credible, are really helpful because I think they do give you an indication, but I think we just don't know what we're not getting. That's the problem.
Yes. I think some of the stories I've got is simply because I've started talking about the subject and the person can tell I'm really interested in it. I've been out doing the investigation work. I've found evidence. And then they'll think to themselves, well, I can tell this person my encounter story. I can trust them. You know, they're not going to laugh at me or anything like that. If you show your enthusiasm for the subject, people will be more forthcoming. That's certainly true.
But you'd recognise that there may be more going on in Caithness than you get told, because it just how it is. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that at all.
Well, thanks ever so much for covering all this detail. And it's so interesting that there's quite a bit of current activity that you can keep tabs on. And you have a fellow investigator as well. So finally, really, is there anything else you wanted to say that you don't think we've covered?
Well, perhaps there may be developments on that mystery cat I think I mentioned to you, the brown with dark stripes but with a puma-like tail.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Quickly tell us about that. Yeah, that was a weird one. Yeah.
Yeah. I got that story completely by chance because I was out, again, walking, and I was just sussing out an area for where I might put cameras. So I happened to walk past this old house that's getting renovated, and a father and son were putting in a new fence. So I just said hello as I went past. And the guy said to me, he says, oh, what brings you up this way? So nowadays, when I meet people and they ask me what I'm doing out there, I just tell them straight away, I'm looking for these cats, you know. So he turned to his son and he said, we saw a big cat last week, didn't we? And I thought, what? And he goes, oh, yes, he says, it was Monday night, he said. We came, pulled in at the driveway there, 7:30 at night, and in the headlights was this big cat. I said, what did it look like? So he said, oh, it was all brown and it had dark vertical stripes. And he said, a big round head on it. So, I mean, the way he held his hands, the head must have been about 8 inches in diameter, at least. The son said, oh, it had long, thin legs. And I thought, okay. So I said, well, what height do you think this thing was at the shoulders? And the father said, oh, 19 inches easily. And I was like, wow. By pure chance, I've got another cat to look out for now. So I've actually got a couple of cameras in that area, along with my scent lure as well, just now. So hopefully, maybe at some point, I'll catch it. But he said that he'd seen it previous to that as well, further up the road, crossing the road. But he'd always assumed just Scottish wildcat. But what he was describing was bigger than a Scottish wildcat. So it's a bit of a mystery.
You're big enough to kill a deer?
Oh, yes, because he was telling me that they'd found dead pheasant, but also I showed him the picture of the roe deer carcass, and he said, oh, we saw a roe deer like that just up at the forest there last year. About 5 weeks before him telling me that story, or was it, no, maybe 3 weeks, I'd actually just been in the forest next to him. I'd just gone up there just for a wee look as I was coming back from checking trail cams. And I just pulled up in my van and I just jumped over the gate and I walked about 30 feet into the forest. And suddenly like this feeling just washed straight down over me. And I thought, I'm being watched. And I felt a little bit scared, but not threatened, not in danger. And I thought, there's a cat here. So I started looking around me and I'm looking in the trees because, you know, they might go up in the trees. And it's quite dark in this forest and there's quite a lot of fallen trees as well, a lot of deadfall. So I'm looking about me and I cannot see this cat, but I know it's there. You know, I have the feeling. Just then I hear this little throaty guttural sound and I thought, that's a cat. Just for 2 or 3 seconds, I heard the sound. By the sound of it, it was feeling a bit disgruntled that I was there. It wasn't like angry with me. It was just like, oh, what are you doing here sort of thing. So then about maybe 15 seconds after that, the feeling went away and I thought, right, the cat's moved. I'll go back to the van, get my kit, came back in and I went looking around and I could not see it and I got no feeling that it was there. So it's obviously took one look at me and thought, ugh, I can't be bothered with this, and just gone. But interestingly, the week after that, I thought, I'll go back a look again because it might still be in the area. And I did find, about 30 feet from where I've been standing, impressions. First, I noticed there's a lot of leaf litter, but I noticed impressions in the leaf litter. So I pulled out the leaves and I found three pretty good impressions. When you pull them out, they went into a depth of about maybe an inch and a half, but it's very wet ground there. I was looking, I think, I'm sure that's four toes and a pad I can see in each of those. And I thought, yeah, that's that cat, no doubt.
Witnesses that are reporting and describing one that doesn't tick the boxes, doesn't fit the bill. Very interesting. I mean, occasionally that does happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
It does throw you, doesn't it, when it happens? Did you invite them to look at photos or on the web of the known species of cat and equate it to any one of those or the closest fit? Did they do that?
Yeah, Paul McDonald recommended that I do that. So what I did was I put a few videos on YouTube of big cats, and one of them was on about, it was about Kellis cats that came up. So I watched a couple of minutes of it. So in that was this, I presume it was an ink drawing of a Kellis cat, but a striped one. And it's probably Victorian era. So I paused the video and I photographed that. So when I showed that to the witnesses, they straight away said, that's it. No markings on the tail, though, they said. So on the advice of Paul McDonald, I showed them like leopard tails, puma tails, a lynx, and they said puma tail. That's what it had. So quite an interesting one there.
You didn't invite them to look at some of the marked, camouflaged young pumas, mountain lions, did you? Sometimes the camouflage can stay on longer than 6 to 8 months.
Oh, no, I didn't. No.
I know they're not terribly stripy, but sometimes it could be the alignment of the markings. It strikes me that that is a candidate. The markings can stay on longer on some pumas.
I'll have to go back and see them, and I'll get some more photographs of young pumas and show them. Yeah, that'll be the best thing, I think.
Good one. Thank you for adding that at the end. So good that you're busy and you're active and you ride on the case. We wish you well, Paul.
Oh, thank you.
You're obviously doing your bit for your region in relation to the whole of Scotland. And thank you for pictures that are going to go on the website.
Oh, you're welcome, yes.
And we'll have more from Scotland soon, back soon with more from Scotland from fellow investigators and other witnesses. So, meantime, thanks ever so much, Paul, for coming on Big Cat Conversations.
Oh, thanks very much, Rick. I've enjoyed it. As I said at the beginning, I can fairly talk when I want to.
Good stuff. Well, that's what it's all about here, as we know.
Yeah, that's very true. Thanks, Rick.
Bye.